With this slide, we have closed our operational strategy section. Let us turn now the page to slide number 46 to discuss our outlook. Prior to entering the detailed outlook, please let me quickly remind Pablo's explanations on our current project portfolio and also on how our portfolio has grown since late 2018. This project portfolio is the basement of the volume outlook we are going to discuss in the following pages. As Pablo has described, our volume and installed capacity outlook is supported by, first, our current portfolio, which gives visibility in the short and medium term with 8.1 GW of pipeline and identified opportunities, plus 1 GW in operation, plus under construction, plus backlog. Second, by our demonstrated capabilities to generate new project opportunities in all geographies, having grown our portfolio in 5.1 GW since the IPO. Moving to slide 47, we are entering into the outlook. In our last earnings call in February, we gave guidance for volume and profitability up to 2023. Today, we are confirming this outlook, and we have presented an extended guidance trend up to 2026. Starting with DevCon activity. In February, we said up to 2023, volumes evolving from 470 up to 600 MW per year. Today, we are extending the guidance to 2024-2026, with an upgraded range of 900 MW-1,100 MW per year. We maintain our average build and sale volume estimate at 30%. For power generation in build and own, under construction, and operating capacity, in February, we said estimated capacity by 2021 year-end at 1 GW. By 2023 year-end, at 1.8 GW-2 GW. Today, we are extending the capacity guidance to 2026 year-end of approx 4 GW. With an expected split by region that is based on our current development portfolio geographic split, with approx 1/3 each for Europe, mainly in Spain, America, and Asia, and approx 5% in Africa, mainly in South Africa. Out of the mentioned 4 GW capacity in 2026, 2.8 GW is expected to come from current development portfolio, operating plus under construction, plus backlog, plus pipeline, plus identified opportunities. Additionally, 1.2 GW should come from our regeneration capabilities in the coming three, four years. Let's turn now to page 48. We have already covered the volume guidance for the period in the previous pages. I will not repeat this part. In our February earnings call, we delivered a clear profitability guidance and risk control metrics. Today, we are confirming this guidance. Let us please remind the specific metrics. DevCon margin, 10%-15%. Power generation equity levered IRRs, 7%-9% hard currency, hard countries, and 11%-14% soft currency, soft countries. The risk control metrics, 2/3 for power generation contracted revenues and for power generation plus services revenues in hard currencies countries. Also, we said in February that it is worth to highlight that in current market environment and sector dynamics, it is required to continuously review the market IRRs to set an adequate balance between growth and profitability targets for each currency type of country. As we have always declared, Solar Pack is focused on profitable growth, and we must be prepared to adapt these targets for maintaining and delivering this profitable growth. Now, let's move to slide 49. The total capex of the just presented figures requires the total amount of 1.5 to 2 billion euros up to 2026. The sources for these investments will come from the operational cash generation of the recurrent cash flows of power generation and services units and from DEFCON cash. Also from the non-recourse project finance debt that will remain the biggest source for funding new projects. And from the corporate leverage headroom based on our current net cash position at the corporate level. Additionally, Solar Pack can benefit from its firepower from asset rotation as we have done in the past, for example, in the Peruvian projects co-investing with Ardian, and also from access to equity markets. Both items will be analyzed to optimize the capital structure of the company. Our flexible funding approach enables Solar Pack to be prepared for addressing faster than anticipated organic growth or considering inorganic growth opportunities. Regarding dividends, Solar Pack is planning to reinvest all the cash generation in value-accretive projects. Therefore, no dividends should be expected in the short term. Finally, let's turn to our last page today, slide 50. With all that, and for finishing this presentation, let me please again quickly remark the key takeaways from today's discussion. Today, we have not presented a disruptive strategy, as said. We like the way we do things. We really think that we are on the right path for delivering a sustainable business model that enables Solar Pack to accomplish and even exceed expectations from all our stakeholders. We have seen that over 80% of the business in 2026 is expected to continue to come from the current geography and technology focus. But it is also remarkable also that we have started to design and walk the path for an attractive Solar Pack beyond 2026, entering new business areas like new markets, expanding storage and energy management, and innovating in energy sales. Our highlights for today are geographic diversification and expansion. We plan to continue strengthening current geographic footprint by deepening in our core high-growth, high-volume markets, Spain, US, India, and LATAM. These markets will contribute to over 80% of our future growth. Selectively, we are planning to enter attractive new frontier markets with special focus on Southeast Asia and Africa. We want to put special focus on tapping corporate PPA growth, entering into storage, and maintaining the innovation as a key element for accessing new business opportunities. In this plan, we target a capacity in operation and under construction by 2023 of 1.8 to 2 gigawatts, and we have shown an extended guidance trend of approximately 4 gigawatts by 2026. This growth is planned to be funded through our operating cash, the project finance for the new projects, and the leverage headroom that we have at the corporate level. But additionally, Solar Pack has firepower from asset rotation and access to equity market that will be considered. Finally, you have seen that at Solar Pack, ESG remains at the core of how we conduct business and at the center of our strategy. So thank you very much for your attention, and let's move now to the Q&A session.
Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. As a reminder, if you wish to ask a question, please press star one on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press the hash key. Your first question comes from the line of Jorge Guimarães from JB Capital. Please go ahead.
Thank you for taking my questions. I'll have four. Sorry, but I'll take the advantage of being the first one. I believe I'll start by the funding question. You are opening the door for a capital increase. So my question would be, under what circumstances you could consider it? And if you could execute the 4-giga plan without the capital increase, so this would be the first one. The second one is a clarification. You say that to reach the 4 gigawatt, you 1.2 gigawatt will come from new opportunities. Are you mentioning the current identified opportunities bucket in your pipeline or another new component or new additions to the pipeline? Because if that is the case, I would. You are currently with a pipeline plus identified opportunities of roughly 8 giga, and it would be only between commas constructing 2.2 or 2.5, something like that. So it would be the execution rate would not be very significant. The third one would be, sorry, once again, the third one would be, are you planning to what about build to sell in 2021? Should this be a gap year, as it was expected before? And finally, and I know that you did not provide any EBITDA guidance, are you comfortable with the consensus for 2021 and 2022 in terms of EBITDA and net income? Thank you very much.
Okay, Jorge, thank you very much for your questions. First one, regarding funding, we are opening the door for capital increase, you said. You have seen the wording that we have used during the presentation, so you are right, we are prepared for a market capital increase. That doesn't mean that we are currently in the capital increase mode. It is very much linked to your question of if we are able to execute the 4 gigawatt growth without capital increase. And here this is highly dependent on how the opportunities arrive in the market, and this is not easy to give you a clear answer here. You know, our funding plan is flexible, and if the growth comes in a faster than anticipated way, this organic growth comes in a faster than anticipated way, or if we find inorganic growth opportunities ahead of us, then probably we should be using a capital increase for addressing that opportunity. So typically, growth does not come smoothly. If it comes smoothly, there is no problem for growing up to the 4 gigawatts without the capital increase. But if there are some, let's say, batches of different opportunities coming in different moments, this could accelerate growth, and also this would mean that we would need a capital increase. So, but for the moment, we are not thinking on that. Second question was related to perhaps...
I'm sorry, hi, Jorge. Maybe I can take that one. So effectively, the 1.2 gigawatts coming from regenerated portfolio would be new opportunities that we will find or originate in this period. If we consider the percentage of success based on our historic rates, that would entail basically coming to new additions to identified opportunities of around 5 to 6 gigawatts in this 6-year period, and that is something that we think that's very reasonable, taking into consideration the 5.1 gigawatts that we've added to our portfolio net, of course, of projects that have also moved to backlog, right? So in reality, the additions have been above the 5.1. And so we believe that this is very much feasible, and also with the special focus and with the increased intensity we're going to put in our development teams in our core markets, we are confident with this regeneration in this six-year period time.
This is Pablo Jorge. Going into your third question, build and sell in 2021. Yeah, we will clearly see a reduction in build and sell in 2021 compared to last year. So we expect to have the tail of some Chilean projects to be built. Roughly 4 projects we have sold to CGE. And potentially also we expect some EPC for third parties to start construction during the year. So that would be it. So the main focus in 2021, as you can imagine, would be the completion of the Malaysia project. We are very much in the middle of the construction stage, and also we expect to start in the second half of this year construction of the Indian projects. We may see as well some other projects in Chile, but all of them would be in build and own mode. So yes, you're right. We will see a reduced build and sell activity in 2021.
Yeah, and your last question was regarding consensus, EBITDA consensus 2021 and 2022. I do not really know what is exactly the consensus, but let me answer with our views for EBITDA 2021-2022. So 2021, As we said during our earnings call, it should be a year where we are installing new build-and-own capacity by year-end, meaning that is Malaysia, and this is around Q4, Q3, Q4. So we'll be contributing for a limited period of time. So we should be thinking in a power generation quite similar to 2020, not very much different. And in DEFCON, the activity is going to be also similar activity. So EBITDA 2021 shouldn't be very much different to EBITDA 2020. For 2022, we have not given any guidance, but here the calculation should be we are going to have a Malaysian projects the whole year, and also some additional projects, smaller, coming in during 2022. It will depend on when exactly Gorbea project starts operations, and this is not yet defined, but could be, let's imagine, at the middle of 2022, so contributing only half year. So there would be some growth in power generation coming mainly from these two big projects, Malaysia full year, and Gorbea approx half year, and in the DEFCON activity increasing slightly the activity compared to previous year. So we should be thinking in the 2022 with higher volumes in terms of EBITDA compared to 2021. So this is, let's say, our rough estimation with the numbers that we are putting on the table.
Okay, many thanks.
And your next question comes from the line of Luis Peralta from GVCG AESCO Gestion. Go ahead, your line is open.
Yeah, hi. Thank you for the opportunity and thanks for the detail you have provided. I have a couple of questions. The first one is about the batteries that you mentioned that you're already starting to deploy your tests. Some of the players mentioned they see the costs of batteries around 2024 to be around somehow $50 megawatt. Don't know if you have a number you can, or color you can throw on that, and also if the price or the cost of the batteries is gonna get in time before the pool profile, the solar pool profile somehow, you know, reduces too much, so you can compensate with that. How you see that the battery is evolving. And my second question would be about the interest rates. I think at the beginning of the presentation you kind of mentioned that for now it's been there's been plenty of financing, low cost financing, but this seems could start changing. Have you analyzed what risks could be for you in terms of costs, availability, or cash flows, etc.? Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Luis, for your question. This is Pablo. Sincerely, I don't think that we are as accurate market observers in the battery business to give you our view on what will happen in 4 or 5 years' time. We can comment, of course, as we have done in the presentation on the EPC costs of our industry, but honestly, the driving forces behind the battery business are also very much related to the EV business. So I think that we cannot give you a very well-defined a thorough opinion on that. On the second part, my answer would be yes. I think that we will see that batteries will be in time to solve potential pool profile problems. I assume that you are referring to the Spanish market, right? So yes, we believe they will be in time. Time to deploy these batteries in existing PV plants. I think that's important. If developers, and that's, for example, something we are already planning for, do permitting in advance and in a timely manner. But the time to build these premises is very quick. So we can see a quick reaction from the market if pull curves start to damage the profile of solar PV. And in any case, I think that the key question to answer that also is how demand will behave in the next few years with this uncertainty still of how much EV, how much potentially green hydrogen. For that, we will need for sure more years, but who knows the speed that this new use of electricity will have in the next coming years with the next generation funds supporting and so on. So we are confident that they will be in time for potentially solving pool profile issues in the Spanish market.
Yeah, regarding your question, the interest rates question. So we are seeing an increase in the US dollar interest rates, and we have not seen significant changes in the euro interest rates on the long run. Is this, will that be affecting our future cash flows? So here our view on that is that it will be obviously affecting LCOE for solar PV, also for other technologies, but obviously also for solar PV. But the mega trend that Javier explained, the growth, the solar PV growth in general and specifically in the markets where we operate, we do not think that this mega trend will be affected, materially affected. Probably it could be somehow changing some figures, but it would not be materially affecting because this is driven mainly by the need of electricity in the different markets. And the increase in interest rates will affect, will not be sufficiently affect that LCOE and that mega trend. So in general terms, it's not good for the sector, obviously, but it would be affect all players in a similar way. And at the end, we will continue living with higher interest rates, very similar way that we are currently doing.
Okay.
Thank you. And your next question comes from the line of Mr. Antonio from CaixaBank BPI. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Good morning, all, and thank you for taking my question. I have four of them. First is regarding on CapEx. In slide number 49, you point that an average estimated CapEx of 0.51 million per megawatt, and this number is a bit ahead of what other players or peers are pointing in their latest comments. So just wanted to you could give us some comments on this figure. And then on IRRs, I was wondering if you could give us some comments in that you are afraid that of you, or what do you think in the trend in Iberia with so many players coming into the market, and if you think that the strong competition could pressure down the IRRs. Then our one is on market, that is you pointed a new frontiers market that you are present in South Africa and Malaysia, but was wondering if you could give us some details of names on some countries where do you think that you could be able to enter. Last, this is on sources of cash. Just if you could make a brief clarification on, and if you are considering selling down minority stakes in your projects or full projects, and also if this option is above or will be considered before than going into the equity capital markets. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Antonio. So entering to the first question, the CAPEX that we put in page 49, that is a little bit higher than others. So this needs to be combined with the page that we covered, 42, that is the one that that is expressing our view on what is CAPEX. And also you need to combine that with the page covered by Javier, number 36, where you see the EPC costs evolution. So combining both pages, both information, you directly arrive to the range that we have incorporated there. So you need to what is the CAPEX that we use? The CAPEX that we use is what we call the SPV CAPEX, that is in the middle of the page 42. This CAPEX, that is in this assumption, 565 thousand euros per megawatt DC. This is an estimation of an average project in Europe, one axis with low interconnection costs. So here, this is the main reason for this, one of the reasons for this big range that we are incorporating, not only that, but also different currencies and different markets and so on, that is making a quite big range. But if you go to the, let's say, middle of the range, for simplifying the numbers, you go to the middle of the range and you use the information that we have put here in the presentation, you arrive directly to our estimates of CAPEX. So this SPV CAPEX, this 565, will be reducing in the coming years with the page 36. EPC cost reduction with this evolution, and you go to the middle of the ranges and you get there. Other players don't know how exactly they are doing, but this is the reason why we have presented this page 42, for making it a little bit clearer and avoiding confusion on how we look into the figures. But other players, potentially, they could be taking out from the CAPEX what we call DEFCON cash. That is the part that we are including in CAPEX, and then we are also including in what we call the sources. So you have like two different ways of analyzing CAPEX. Gross CAPEX and then taking out as sources DEFCON cash, or netting from the very beginning the CAPEX with the DEFCON cash. So these are the two ways of analyzing the numbers. I think you will arrive to reasonable figures that you will see in our presentations in page also 42 and 36.
Yeah, and just to add on top of that, we have been we wanted to be very clear in what is included here in this EPC cost breakdown and what is not. And I think that's also needed in order to assess every number that is given for EPC cost. Is it just for the PV part? Is it just for the whole investment EPC needs of the project, including interconnection or not? Is it for a fixed tilt system? Is it for a one-axis tracker? Is it for a huge project? Is it for a small project? So here we have what we see, average figures for an average size project in Europe, one axis, and including interconnection costs, which could vary a lot from one project to the other. We have used what we consider our low interconnection costs for this sample number.
So here, the second question was related to Iberia competition. Pablo, I don't know if you want to cover that.
Yeah, yes. I mean, based on the outcome of the tender, we see a very relevant pressure to IRRs down. We don't see that as much in the private PPA market. And for us, the key will be being innovative and being able to market adequately this energy to markets where the visibility, the of prices of returns are not as high as maybe in the tenders. So, I mean, pressure is for IRRs is down. This is something that we expected. This is not something unexpected in the Spanish market. But we believe that there will be healthy IRRs. But, of course, if we are able to tap demand in a good way. On the third one, new frontier markets. Yeah, we can give some details of countries. For example, in Africa, we are taking a look at Tunis. In Southeast Asia, we are taking a look at and even participating in tenders in countries like Cambodia or Laos. We are, as we said, present in Vietnam. And we are also closely looking the activity that is starting to take place in Indonesia, which is a huge market, a huge opportunity.
Yeah, and the final question was regarding the minority stakes or full project sales and so on. So here regarding that, we have, let's say, a clear strategy that is our build and sell strategy that is also very much linked to the to our asset rotation strategy. So we are selling 30% of our projects. We are willing to sell them. It could be in a build and sell process from the very beginning, let's say, from directly from the DEFCON divisions, or it could be also through asset rotation. As we said in the during the presentation, we are using asset rotation and also equity market access as two additional levers for optimizing our capital structure in the company and in the also specifically in the projects. We have used asset rotation in the past. We have sold farmed down up to 49% of our projects, for example in Peru, that we sold stakes to Ardian, and we are partnering with them not only these projects but also other projects in Peru. So this is something that we are quite used to do and that we feel very much comfortable, and we do it when we understand that regarding, for example, investments, country risk, also currency risk, and value extraction, it makes sense. So this is something that we are willing to continue analyze and is a relevant part of our business, no doubt.
Okay. Thank you very much. Very helpful.
And your next question comes from the line of Mr. V. Sams from Santander. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Yes, hello, this is Virginia Sanz de Madrid from Santander. Thank you for taking the question. My first question was to understand well your target. In page 48 of the presentation, I wanted to really understand when you speak about evolving 470 megawatts to 600 megawatts per year and then moving this figure 900 to 1.1 gigawatts, because on the top of that page you say yearly order intake. Is that what you mean by that target, that that's the way the pipeline should be moving, or is this what you plan to have on a yearly basis under development and construction, or exactly understand what the target means, because I got a bit confused with the yearly order intake that you mentioned in that page on the top. Then in page 39, you were referring to the renewable corporate PPA market that you highlighted was 24 gigawatts in 2020. I understand that is on a global basis. I don't know if you have a view how that market could be evolving and how much of that, or what is the size you expect this market to be for Spain in both 2020 and 2021. I don't know if you have those numbers. And last on the appendix that Pablo was referring to, where you give the detail of the pipeline. For example, I wanted to understand in the U.S., where I see that you have submitted interconnection rights. How long is that a difficult market to finally obtain the interconnection right? And also when you say secured site control, how long does it take until actually it moves to obtained site control instead of secured? I see another assets you refer to obtained site control. Thank you.
So thank you, Virginia, for your questions. Regarding the targets, as we say in page 48, there is this evolving from 470 to 600 and then evolving from 900 to 1100. This is order intake, meaning order intake for us means projects that enter into backlog. So the DEFCON activity of those projects entering to backlog is expected to happen as average, and this is very difficult to give you in the precise figure, but as average the following year. So the following 12 months, the project that enters into backlog today, in 12 months it starts construction, approx, and that this is average figure. So these figures, when thinking in DEFCON activity, these figures here, this outlook here should be moved, let's say, 1 year later into DEFCON activity. But we are not talking here about projects entering into pipeline or identified opportunities. We're specifically into our bucket that we call backlog. Okay, this is order intake. Hopefully this clarifies.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, very clear, thank you.
Yeah, Virginia, this is Pablo. On the question about the corporate PPAs, what we want to highlight in this slide is that this portion of the market is already significant. 24 gigawatts in 1 year is already a very nice number, right? Although it is not the huge majority of the demand nowadays. And what we see is in the last 2 years, it has been consistently growing. And what we see is that we will see growth in the coming years as well. But we also need to address that this is not a very consistent market in the different territories. We can see a huge market, for example, in the U.S. for this type of corporate PPAs. I would say that in continental Europe as well. I think that in Spain we are seeing a slow growth, but in Spain we are seeing that energy traders, energy retailers are playing a big role to gap generation and demand. So it is it is not clear for us to give a thumb in the Spanish market, but what we can say is that we are working into alternatives, into designing products that can make the entry into this type of PPAs more attractive to corporate. On the last question about the interconnection for the U.S., interconnection process in the U.S. is typically long. It lasts approximately 2 years. It could even go to 3 years because it is organized in a way of queues. So the projects we do have in the pipeline, and this process, let me go back to what I was explaining. This process is not, you know, you only know about this process at the end, in the 2 years or three. It has intermediate steps, which are called system impact study, facilities study, which already give you an idea, for example, if there is capacity available. And the projects that we have included in pipeline, they have gone already through intermediate steps, and we know that there is capacity. The pending item for completing this interconnection process is typically a full facility study and an interconnection agreement, which basically determines which are the facilities that need to be built so that your project is able to connect to the grid. So the project we have here in pipeline, we have a clear visibility that there is capacity. There is still uncertainty on the costs. If we believe that the cost will be huge, we will keep this project still in identified opportunities until this is clarified. But here we have projects that have available capacity and that we understand costs will be in a reasonable range. And then on site control, we typically, I mean, we have options to lease. All of these sites have signed options to lease, which typically have a long period in the range of 4 to 5 years. Let's say that we say secured once the construction is underway and we execute the option to lease, but obtained. We would classify obtained when the option to lease is there, right? So there is no uncertainty on the site control. That's what we want to make clear, because we have a firm contract with an option to lease in 5 years.
Okay, thank you.
Once again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. And if you wish to cancel your request, please press the hash key. Our next question comes from the line of Miguel Medina from Aram Next.
Yeah, good morning. Just two questions. The first one is on the two projects that you have mentioned that will have a significant impact on EBITDA in 21 and 22, the one in Malaysia and the one in India. Obviously, as soon as they go into operation, they contribute to EBITDA. I was just wondering when you have access to the cash that those projects generate. Are there any restrictions because of the project financing and the debt service coverage ratio that will push back the access to that cash flow? That's the first question. And then the second one is on the risk control measures and the percentage of merchant revenues, which it will not be more than one-third. If I recall correctly, that's unchanged from the IPO. If I look at the projections that you have made, we can see very significant growth for the solar market. I guess that implies eventually that you will have to increase the weight of merchant in your portfolio. Are you still comfortable with that cap of one-third, or do you think that you will have to leave that cap in order to take advantage of the growth of opportunities in solar PV?
Okay, thank you, Miguel, for your question. This is Pablo. Yeah, on the Malaysia and India project question, I mean, typically, any project which is financed with the project finance will have for the first year restrictions to pay out cash. And that is because first the debt service coverage ratio in one full year has to be measured, and assuming that it is above certain thresholds, cash can be easily distributed. After that point in time, depending on the jurisdictions, we have contracts that allow us to pay out cash from the project 3 times a year, 2 times a year, or only once a year. That depends on the market. So for the first year, you should not expect, and we don't expect, cash to be extracted from the SPV, from the project SPV. That should happen after 12 months. And on the merchant revenues, I mean, given our risk profile, we are very comfortable looking at the levels we are today, the levels that we are expected to be in 2 years' time. Just for you to know, India and the Malaysia project are 100% PPA revenues. No, not a single kilowatt hour will be sold exposed to merchant. So this will give us a boost to the percentage of contracted revenues. And we believe we have enough room to accommodate other projects with some exposure to merchant.
Thank you very much.
And the next question comes from the line of Mario Santos from Soros Fund Management. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi. Good morning. Thanks very much for the presentation. It was very informative. I just have three questions on the San Marcos project, the one that you are going to be using batteries on. The first one is about the sizing of the batteries relative to the project. So running some quick numbers, if you have 13.2 megawatts, let's say 22% load factor, that means you're going to be producing around 70 megawatts hour per day. The batteries in phase three are going to be 4.4. Is that the size that we should expect for a, not a pilot project, but a proper project running in industrial terms on full capacity, which would imply that you could be able to sell 5 to 6% of the energy produced at a different time at which it's produced effectively? That's question number one. Question number two is if you could provide us a breakdown of the $10 million capex that project is going to imply. What goes to batteries within that $10 million? That would be very helpful. And then question number three is why pick Chile for this pilot project? Should we understand that the conditions of the market are more attractive in terms of the difference between peak and trough electricity prices in Chile, or why was that rather than, let's say, peak Spain, which is a country where you are more proximate to? That's all. Thank you.
Okay, Mario, this is Javier. Let me try to answer the questions. If Ignacio and Pablo want to complement anything, you know, they can jump in. But with regards to the sizing of the project in general, I think you've made a good comment. And the reality is that even if it's a pilot project, the size of the project is already at the industrial scale. And this is very much in line with the fact that when we test things, we want to do it in projects of a size that are manageable on the one hand, but that are that can lead to experiences that can be extrapolated to bigger projects. So, when deciding about the size and the investment that implied in general, we were determined in betting or in building a project with sufficient size for us to test not only the technologies but also the business models. Okay, so I don't know if that answers your question, but we took an industrial approach to this project, even if we're calling it a pilot project. Okay,
just one comment in there. So my question was specifically around the proportion of batteries relative to installed capacity, which seems relatively small to what one would expect for a larger project. So if my numbers are correct, what you are going to be able to do with this battery contribution is you are going to be able to save about 6% of the electricity that it's produced in the solar park, and you are going to be able to sell it later on at a higher price. And that that 6% comes from dividing the 4.4 megawatt hour of capacity from the batteries by the 70 megawatt hours that you are going to be producing daily, assuming that you have a 22% load factor. So is that battery size appropriate relative to what we should expect once you are deploying batteries in other projects worldwide, or it's just because it's a pilot project and you are starting small with the batteries specifically?
No, as we say in the slide, you know, when people think about batteries, typically they think about load shifting only. And as we shared in the slide, you know, the batteries or this pilot project will test different business models, not only load shifting, but actually frequency control services and firm capacity, for which in reality you don't need a huge amount of storage, but actually you need to be able to respond with a certain power for, you know, for a limited amount of time. Then when it comes to testing load shifting application, it is important to take or to consider the ratio of power and storage, energy storage capacity of the system, meaning that even if, you know, the batteries itself themselves only in one cycle per day would represent, I think you said, 6% of the total energy generated in the whole year. That is true. Well, you can also do more than one cycle if you're tackling different alternatives. But the truth is that you can also extend the production after solar hours depending on the power output of that battery system. Okay, so that's something that also you need to take into account. And to the third comment, this is not a sizing that we expect to necessarily use every time we do a storage project going forward. I think that the sizing criteria was to have large enough battery system that allows us to test, again, two different technologies with DC and AC coupling, and to understand how those technologies behave with different revenue model applications. This is the whole purpose of the system, and yeah, that's basically it.
Yeah, on the breakdown of investment, it is north of $2 million. So given that the battery system is not contracted, we want it also to be cautious, not to invest a huge amount of money without a pre-validated business model. So that's more or less the number. And then the question on why Chile, it's because we are placing these batteries at the very end of the Chilean grid, in the very north of Chile, close to Peru. So that's where we believe that the highest needs and the highest issues for grid balances will appear, and that's where we want to have our batteries performing to get a good learning curve on in difficult circumstances. How could batteries support the grid system? And also because Chile has enacted a very interesting regulation for ancillary services. It is planned to have auctions for ancillary services in the coming months and years, and that's also a market where we believe the learning curve for applying business models will be very positive. And also, in particular in this northern part of Chile, the gap between day and night prices is probably at the highest point we can see in the markets we operate. So it's a good combination of all these three elements.
Okay, thank you very much. May I add just another question regarding this?
Sure.
Do you see, on a much more longer term view than today, so I appreciate that it's still very early on, and the fact that you are starting already to test this technology is very encouraging to what the ultimate profitability from these assets that you're going to be able to get is going to be. But I wonder if you see opportunities to pursue a slightly different business model, which would be just build battery parks without the solar panels. Let's say that you come to a point where you see similar discrepancies between day and night prices in the countries in which you are, and you just build a battery park to buy electricity when it's cheaper and deploy it when it's more expensive. Is that something that you could do, or is not within your area of focus?
Yeah, Mario, thank you for the question. Yeah, that's something that we, of course, we could do, but we cannot say today that we will do. We believe that the battery market will be shaped in the coming years, and we still have to see how much specialization will be there, so that there will be solar PV energy suppliers, there will be on the other side, battery system suppliers that can manage imbalances and have a business model pretty much specialized into that. We don't have a clear answer. We would absolutely consider being one of these players, but we don't have certainty that being a solar PV player plus battery player will be the winning formula in the market.
Okay, thanks very much for everything, guys. Thank you.
Thank you. There are no further questions at this time, and I would like to hand back over to the speakers for their final remarks.
Okay, well, Lorian, thank you very much. We would like to thank everyone for attending the call, and as always, we remain at your disposal to answer any follow-ups that may come up. We will upload the recording of this presentation to our website once we get it, and please subscribe to our investor relations newsletters if you haven't done so, to be informed about next events, presentation, results, all that. Thank you very much, and have a great day.
Thank you. That does now conclude our conference for today. Thank you, everyone, for participating, and you may now all disconnect. Speakers, please stand by.